morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. I'm Eric George and it's the 13th of December 2012. I haven't talked about it a whole lot on this podcast so far, but both myself and Kirk have been a little bit derisive of the A-League in Australia's sporting landscape so far. But it's been an interesting year for it this year, and it's something that's kind of caught my attention a little bit. So I've called in the help of somebody who knows a lot more about it than I do, Ben Kazubi, who's a journalism student and a budding sports journo who does his own work over at BountifulGloryNews.com to kind of help me understand where the A-League is right now. How are you, Ben?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
I am very well, thank you. Thanks for coming on. So this is, like I said, it's gotten a lot of attention. There's been a lot of news stories written about this is the breakout season for the A-League. This year seems to be the year where it's finally starting to click for them. Would you agree with that proposition?
It's the first year I've seen in Murdoch newspapers where you've got three-page colour spreads of weekend games and the work of people like David Davidovic covering the game. Fox Sports is getting over 100,000 viewers, which is probably for the first time consistently in its history. So, yeah, it's starting to really establish itself. Has it broken out yet? It's getting there. It's on the precipice of becoming its own thing.
Yeah, and I think it's a bit of a, look, I've kind of set you up as a bit of a dud question there because it's a hard thing to define, but it certainly seems like it's getting a lot more traction in mainstream media, and that seems to be a big thing. I mean, I watch a lot of rugby union as well, and the common complaint there is you never see it on free-to-air TV and no one talks about it in the newspapers. So for the A-League to be getting that, I think is a significant step.
It definitely is. I think that, to be honest, in the old, because it's not only trying to get this league coverage, it's also selling the sport. The sport isn't, it's lucky to have the Socceroos qualify, and the Socceroos' successes are probably one of the biggest factors in the A-League, slowly coming to prominence, the last two World Cups qualifying. But what will be interesting is now that it's grown itself, the Socceroos aren't, the list of the players are starting to age and we might not qualify for the next World Cup. So it'd be interesting to see how it works on its own merit until, that next generation of players come through.
You raise a very good point, and it was basically the next thing I wanted to talk about was, if we agree that the A-League is succeeding and it is improving, what the factors are there. And you raise essentially, I think, a key conundrum for a sport like the A-League where so much of what people understand about the sport itself is from overseas. So this season seems to have coincided the success with these imported stars like Del Piero and Heskey and all this who are drawing big crowds both in TV and live. Do you think that the imported stars are more important to the current success of the A-League than our local players?
It's a very interesting question. Basically, their worth is worth in numbers and worth in revenue, and I think what a lot of the A-League heads have implied is that once we get this, we can shift it into the talent on field and sporting and footballing academies at lower levels, which there are for clubs like the bigger clubs such as Melbourne Victory and Central Coast Mariners and Sydney FC. But some of the smaller clubs don't have that, like a Wellington Phoenix or something like that. So it's about establishing a base and using the star power of a Heskey or a Del Piero or a Shinji Ono. And it's not saying that we don't have talented kids. I mean, the new Socceroos squad, we've got Aaron Moy, who's a very young, talented footballer who probably will be one of the Socceroos player of a generation. Marco Rojas for the Melbourne Victory, Thomas Rogic, those two are, they've got trials with Bundesliga clubs at the end of the season. Matt Ryan, the Central Coast Mariners goalkeeper, Hull City are interested in him. So the youth are doing their job and they're coming through and they're exciting and they're talented. And that's also the downfall of being a league in which bigger leagues can poach, because players of really good young talent will always, maybe want to go elsewhere with, Europe on their minds, a bigger stage. But the young talent is definitely coming through. It's not just a retirement league, as the criticism has been pitched.
Yeah, yeah, I have seen that leveled a couple of times at the A-League. And that's a really interesting point about the fact that obviously it's a global game, so there's much more money and much more fame to be attracted playing in England or Europe or a lot of other places than there is playing for Adelaide United, for example. So what do you think is going to be the most important thing for the A-League's ability to be able to keep those young stars that are coming through and then have Australian stars playing on Australian teams?
To keep them here, we need to create a stable competition, which, I think, we haven't had a stable football competition ever in this country. The NSL was practically a guide how not to run a football competition. There were some clubs there that sort of, they fell to infighting and regulations. And, when you have franchises and people criticise, and I'm all for that criticism, that franchises suck. The sort of culture that you expect that successful clubs have and, well-known clubs have, like overseas, it's an average analogy, but like a Liverpool or Man United, they've been here for 100 years. With some of these clubs here, we need to create strong cultures. We need to have these games, well covered in the media, and we also need to play attractive football. In the time that I've been watching the A-League, I started in the second season, the quality has improved as we've gone along.
Yeah, that is clear. It certainly seems like there's much more highlights coming through, and the amount of goals that are being scored this season certainly seems to be quite impressive. This whole concept of local players versus imported players. The other question I have about this in terms of the stability for the league going forwards is, if you look at something like another international sport that was successful in Australia in the past was basketball in the NBL in the 90s, in the late 80s, when obviously basketball was booming overseas and around the world, but also Australia got these imported cast-offs, essentially the guys who couldn't play in the NBA, but a lot of American flashy players who attracted people to basketball, and building a league which largely marketed itself or was helped along the way by those imported players, was it the most stable way going forwards? Because when that fell through, when they left, there just wasn't enough there to excite people. So do you feel it's really a cultural element that's going to be required for the stability to stick around in the A-League and not to fall away the same way that happened in the NBL?
I think it's cultural, and it's also, it's definitely the audience. I think you'll find now that a lot of European migrants and a lot of migrants from countries where football is the most prominent sport, the second generation of kids is, sort of growing up now. And, they've not just grown up with a football team, they've grown up with an international football team, a soccer team, if you will, a Liverpool or a Manchester United. They get up at all hours of the morning and they watch games and they talk about it, they play it in the schoolyard, and you see it more prominent. And I think that now that that's sort of been sort of pushed into the collective national culture as, prominent, whereas basketball was, it was mainly just followed by America. It's big in Europe, it's big in, places like China, but it's not the majority, it's never the main sport. It's always been played second fiddle.
Yeah.
And I think with football, it's starting now with a lot of, to be honest, I think that passing it down and generation to generation, that is the biggest, if it can survive for 20 or 30 years, the A-League, it should be fine. It should make it through that period where a lot of leagues, where the NSL failed.
Yeah. And I mean, as you pointed out before, I think there might have been other factors involved in the NSL's failure. I think there were some big cultural issues, from what I understand, essentially warring subcultures within Australia, going to specific clubs and it all being a bit odd there. So one thing that obviously has to be an advantage for football in Australia is the participation at an amateur level. It's extraordinarily popular as an amateur sport. You mentioned these clubs having feeder systems and academies and stuff like that. Is there something similar to what the AFL did so successfully with Auskick in place already at that A-League that I might not have heard of, or is it less formalised than that?
To be honest, at the moment, probably not as prominent, and it's something that Melbourne Victory and Melbourne Heart, they've started in the last couple of years to offer sporting scholarships at Cedar Academies, and, you know, to 14 and 15 year old kids who, you know, might like to take it on. And actually, it's an interesting point, because at the Melbourne Victory members meeting the other night, one of the key points that Ange Postecoglou and, you know, the owner of the Melbourne Victory Football Club made was that they want homegrown players that from Victoria, and that's the source of our talent, not that we have to spend money on imports and rely on the league's success on imports, but rely on, you know, growing your own talent. And I'm pretty sure that clubs all over the country are starting to implement that sort of scholarship program.
So, yeah, this is a dynamic that I find very interesting about football, is it seems like it's such a tribal sport. It's such a cultural sport. Like, it's, you know, you're born into a club and you stay with that club for your life, and it's family and it's a local thing. But at the same time, I can't think of any sport at a top level, except for perhaps baseball, that gets so many player transfers all the time, and players are treated like cattle and, you know, shipped from here to there and loaned to a team and blah, blah, blah. So how, I mean, I can totally agree with what you're saying. If you get that tribal aspect with Victorians playing Victoria and New South Wales from playing in New South Wales, it'll create, you know, inbred cultures there. But is it really that important to football as a concept?
It's important for the league, because what happens is, and you'll see some, yeah, examples of players where they've been overlooked from their home state systems. There's an Adelaide player, Evan Kostopoulos. He was in the New South Wales system, and he was overlooked by the now four New South Wales clubs. And, you know, Adelaide took a punt on him, and he's been playing pretty well. So I think that, you know, if they aren't picked up and they aren't, you know, sort of bred into a state versus state system, in that other, not only Melbourne Victory can take from there, but other clubs can take from other states. It sort of allows a, you know, diverse playing field, where it's not as us versus them. It's a national competition, and clubs need to do their proper scouting to make sure that they get the best young players. And if they miss out, well, then another club's going to come in and swoop on them.
Yeah, and I guess the other part of that is the competitiveness for talent in Australia, as we've got so many sports competed at such a high level with so few people, that if they can start locking in that talent at an early age and creating clear pathways, I guess that'll probably improve the quality of local players coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a current criticism that I think people are, with the expansion of the AFL, saying, you know, we're watering down the depth pool, and you know, I don't think that's true. I think that, you know, it's, there's always going to be kids that are interested in sport, and you know, there's good money there, and I think that the passion there in this country is good enough that if a sport can get its financial and its administrative side right, it'll survive.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned expansion, and it's been a bit of a tough task for the A-League. Obviously, some expansion sides have folded at this point for various reasons. What do you think about the current expansion sides that we see in recent years in the A-League, obviously in Western Sydney and Melbourne Heart?
Melbourne Heart, yeah, it's kind of odd because I'm a Melbourne Victory supporter.
Well, take your Melbourne Victory hat off for a sec.
Yeah, I'll take my hat off now. But in all seriousness, Melbourne Heart, it was always going to be difficult for Melbourne Heart to establish themselves here in Melbourne after Melbourne Victory existed here for 7 years and took up most of the footballing landscape. And Melbourne Heart, I think their problem is that their fans will come. I think that they will find their success one day, but there's a teething process that the league needs to keep an eye on, that they maybe need to narrow their product. They may need to, because what I've noticed, that they've seemed to target a lot of families with disposable incomes, and, you know, they sort of seem eastern suburbish, and that it's a good thing because it adds a geographical location to them, but they can't do that because Melbourne Victory have supporters from all different suburbs. Melbourne Heart I think there's a lot of people who follow international football, they don't follow Australian football, and I think that's where Hart need to get the most of their base from. And I think that once they start winning some of them over and start, you know, convincing people who look down on the A-League, which is understandable, it's only 7 years old, the quality, it's improving before our eyes, and you know, they need to target that. They can't continue to exist on a anti-Melbourne Victory system as their product. Western Sydney Wanderers, I reckon they're a success story so far. Considering that during the NSL days, you know, the main criticism of why lots of clubs failed in the western suburbs of Sydney were that there were too many and that there wasn't enough people. And I think now with a lot of migrants moving to that area in the last 20 years and, you know, that existing support there, that one team, the Wanderers, you know, averaging 8,000 to 9,000 people in their first season. Not a lot of A-League clubs have done that. And the Red and Black Brigade behind the goals, they're loud. The stadium seems full. And for a first year, they're doing okay. And I think, yeah, if you start well, then you should be all right.
Mm-hmm. I think you identify some cultural differences between Sydney and Melbourne cities that perhaps give Western Sydney a bit of an advantage. I mean, the actual concept of a Western Sydney team and a Sydney team actually makes sense geographically, whereas in Melbourne, you've kind of just got two Melbourne teams. Like, Melbourne doesn't split as that.
Yeah, geographical, you know, where do you stand for? And, well, this is the thing that a lot of people are now debating. Melbourne Hearts, you know, their locale is out at La Trobe Uni, and, you know, some people are starting to say now, well, why don't they represent the northern suburbs? But on the same page, it may be too late to do that because the Victory have fans there. So it's a confusing issue, and it's a complex issue that the Melbourne Heart marketing team and the FFA have to start working out if they're to ensure their success.
So you've now obviously got two teams in each of Australia's biggest cities, which creates the derby games, especially the Melbourne one seems to have gotten a lot of attention. How important are these matches for the success of the A-League now?
Well, they're seemingly the gem in the crown of the game. The atmosphere is actually brilliant. The last Melbourne derby got 42,000 people. The Western Sydney FC derby at the Parramatta Stadium sold out the ground. So, and this weekend they actually play each other at the Sydney Football Stadium, which they expect to get over 30,000. Those games are the ones that sort of get the most press. They're the ones that are on the back page of the paper in summer. They're the ones that get hyped up, and there's often an exchange or a war of words, smack talking between sides. So it's important to establish rivalries. It's important to establish, a history, something that we can go on for, and, you know, incidents in games, you know, where one club spites the other or another player gets injured or a team wins a game, comes from behind and really rubs it in the opposition. It creates history, it creates passion, and it creates something that the league can springboard off in its next step.
Yeah, we did a podcast on this show a couple of months ago now about sporting rivalries, and one thing both myself and Kirk agreed on was that proximity is something that really does breed easy rivalries. I mean, obviously you've had stuff like Adelaide United and Melbourne Victory playing in grand finals, in a number of years, that kind of built some animosity, but nothing's really going to do it like those easy kind of rivalries to cultivate, like having two teams in one city, and obviously you're going to know the other fans and you're going to want to prove that you're the best in a town. So I'm liable to agree. It's just interesting that it's almost, I think, maybe an advantage more than anything else for the A-League, is that this whole culture is so distinct from league, AFL or rugby union, and how these rivalries work. It's such the concept of the supportive groups and everything And perhaps this is where the derbies will come into their own the most and help differentiate the league. It's just not something you see, even in obviously big AFL rivalries or big rugby league rivalries. It's a different spin on a familiar concept.
It is, and I think even you'll find with the Melbourne derby, or maybe even now the derby between the Wanderers and Sydney FC, that now some of the supporters at the two new clubs were supporters of the older clubs, the inaugural clubs like Melbourne Victory and Sydney FC. You'll see some of those supporters, you know, they know people that went for the other club. They used to go for the other club, but now they've changed sides, and it's created a, I don't want to say, you know, something where violence exists, but there's a hatred. There's a really strong hatred that, you know, we were here first. You know, you, and especially from a Melbourne Victory or a Sydney FC point of view, is the bigger club point of view. Why do you exist? That's often the jibe or remark made to the other club, and you'll find that a lot of Melbourne Heart broke away because they didn't like the way that Melbourne Victory operated, and that's fair enough. And a lot of the Western Sydney Wanderers fans broke away from supporting Sydney FC because they didn't like the way it was handled, and I understand that, and you know, that's the way sport works, I guess.
Yeah, you mentioned the violence aspect for soccer, and I was speaking about the cultural differences that separate soccer from other Australian sports, and it is one very distinctive one, and I think it's one that perhaps unfairly but definitely attracts negative press, whether it's in the papers or on talkback stations. I do still, you know, hear people ringing up the ABC and saying, I don't feel like it's safe to take my kids to an A-League game because of the way people talk and because, you know, flares and all this stuff, especially because they see what happens in Europe. How do you feel the A-League has to temper that in terms of managing the image of the sport as it's growing in Australia?
It's a question of whether it asks its supporters to change or whether it attempts to implement that it's not as bad as it's being made out to be. Support of violence, I haven't, in all the years that I've gone, I haven't seen much of it. I've seen one or two incidents, but then again, I see the same at the football. It kind of is blown out of proportion. A lot of people that don't understand that even with own, it's different to AFL clubs and NRL clubs in that one supporter base can be split in two. For example, the Melbourne Victory have the North Terrace or the Blue and White Brigade. But also there's, at the other end of the stadium, sitting at home games, the South End, who don't like how, you know, the North Terrace, what chants they use or how they support or what they do. So it's sort of segregated at all football clubs around in A-League. It's all segregated in its own way, and that's always been something about football, that there's always, you know, from Milan and Inter Milan, that those clubs and Borussia Dortmund, you know, these powerhouse clubs with massive fan bases are broken up and segregated because even supporting a club is politicised, and, you know, there's a social pecking order, and it's really interesting. And whether the league wants to sell it like that, sell it as it's intriguing, you know, or they want to sell it as, no, we want a cohesive supporter base with, you know, zero fights or violence. But again, as I said, the violence angle is probably, you know, unfairly put upon the A-League.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that. I think there's, you know, there's parts of the media that aren't fond of the A-League and aren't fond of soccer. They don't think it's an Australian thing, so they might want to paint it in a negative light. Do you think that it's possible to remove that element of soccer, football, without also removing an element of the passion that's intrinsic to the sport?
It's a difficult question. I don't think it's one that a lot of people, not just us, have been trying to work out. The league, to its credit, has come to supporter bases and said, you know, we support your freedom of speech, your banners, your signs. However, we're not going to tolerate flares. 5-year ban on the spot if you're caught with one. And they've come to all the football clubs, all the venues, the security, and this is probably the best way it can deal with it at the moment. And it might work, it might not, but they get the security, they get the police, they get the venue, and they get the supporter base active areas, which they're called, and they all sit down and they write up a doctrine, and then they say, okay, you can do this, but then you can't do that. You can do this, but you can't do that. You can have this banner, but you can't throw a flare. So it's good that they've come to the supporters, and, you know, this is, again, maybe the breaks down the criticism that the league is plastic and it's, you know, it doesn't care about the bases. It's come to the supporters and said, you make this sport at the moment, so we're going to deal with you personally. And I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, that's impressive. And it's certainly a much more mature way of handling things than what you see from a lot of sporting administrations. Moving on, I'd like to finish off with just perhaps talking about the stability of the A-League going forwards, because one thing you've touched on a lot through this conversation is the fact that A-League fans are soccer fans. They watch Man U, they watch the Champions League, they watch lots of different forms of soccer. So I'm wondering whether people are in love with the A-League yet, or they're just in love with soccer, and how that affects, you know, the stability of the future for the A-League going forwards, because if they just like soccer, then they'll watch anything.
That's true. There's an element to that. And I think there was some of that mentality around the end of about 99, 2000, around that when it was attempted to be made mainstream, the NSL. Mm-hmm. And I think what the A-League have done right this time is that they've done stuff like fan engagement, that they've made sure that the fans enjoy their match day experience enough that they can grow to love it. And I think the existence of, as we touched on before, some of the rivalries, and, you know, some of the things that are said at games, and some of the things and the way fans feel about other clubs, that it sort of galvanises them into one. Like, they may be segregated in some parts of the stadium, but they all hate the other team. And, you know, you can see them, you know, having favourite players. You can see them now enjoying certain systems and the way it's played. I mean, in season two when I started, there was a lot of just bombing the ball and, you know, long ball and going forward. But you see now with a lot of coaches coming from overseas and implementing certain styles like possession and all kinds of things that, you know, brings, you know, a spectacle, and people are starting to enjoy that spectacle, and they're starting to love going and watching their team every day. They count down the days of the week and they want to go see their team.
So it sounds like you're suggesting that by making the live product more appealing, because obviously they can't go and see Man U play live, is that the key edge for the A-League going forward?
It definitely is. I need to create an environment in which, yes, it has to be family friendly, and it is to a certain degree, but they also need to maintain that connection with the grassroots fans, make sure they're comfortable, make sure the atmosphere is good, and they're ticking all those boxes so far. That's what they need to keep going with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think my opinion of the A-League was certainly coloured by the quality of games that you were suggesting came around at the start, when I kind of looked at it out of curiosity and I felt like I was wasting my time a little bit, but you've certainly changed my opinion over the last half an hour or so, Ben. So I thank you for that. Thanks for coming on and giving us your insight into the culture of the A-League.
Sure, anytime. Yeah, good to chat.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be back next week with another episode of the Sports Polygamy Podcast. Until then, you can find this podcast at sportspolygamy.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and iTunes, where you can subscribe to keep track. Until then, I'm Eric George. Thanks for listening. See ya.